Well, good morning. Thank you guys for having me back. I guess last time wasn't terrible. So I'm going to preach the exact same sermon and hope to do it better. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not going to do that. So I'm going to start. I want to see if you guys have heard this phrase used before, a kid in a candy store. Have you guys heard that? And what do you picture when you hear that saying, a kid in a candy store? Probably this giant candy store, maybe one that you've actually been to before. And maybe just this child just going crazy, running from like the M&Ms to the gummies to the lollipops with just this face of glee, right? They're not worried about how they're going to get home. They don't even want to go home. They're not worried about what's for dinner. Their parents can figure that out. They're not worried about what happens tomorrow. They're in the moment enjoying the candy. They don't even care about the stomach ache they're going to have in about 2 hours, right? I think that we would think of this behavior as reckless. They're not worried about anything except for where they are. They're not planning ahead. Children are reckless. But I think that we see a model of children that's something very different than what we think of as reckless. So if you guys wouldn't mind opening up to Matthew 19, verses 13 through 15. Matthew 19, verses 13 through 15. It says, "The children were brought to him that he may lay his hands on them and pray. The disciples rebuked the people, but Jesus said, 'Let the little children come to me and do not hinder them, for to such belongs the kingdom of heaven.' And he laid his hands on them and went away." Wow. To such belongs the kingdom of heaven. I'm looking out. I don't see a lot of children here. Does that mean we're in trouble? We can't have the kingdom of heaven? I want to look through this passage and talk about ultimately what it means to never grow up, to be like these children in the passage. I think that there are multiple groups of people present in this passage, and in order to walk through this, I want to look into each group of people and see what we can learn from them and how that can lead us to a better relationship with the Lord. So the first group of people in this passage that I want to look at are the parents from verse 13. And now I know a lot of you guys are probably rereading verse 13 and you're saying, "Maxwell, it doesn't say anything about parents." But it does say that the children were brought to him. Children cannot go many places on their own. And it says that they were brought to him. And I think it implies that these parents were bringing their children to the feet of Jesus. The first thing I want to look at here as we look at the parents is why they would bring their children there. Now, how many of you guys have kids? How many of you are parents? A lot. I'm not, but I've heard a lot about it. I'm very grateful that I'm not right now. But as parents, you want the best for your children, right? The very best. And I think that the parents here saw that Jesus could offer their children something that they could not. And it says that they were brought to him that he may lay his hands on them and pray. Now, I'm sure the parents could pray for their kids themselves, but they brought their children to Jesus wanting the best for them because they realized Jesus could offer them something that the parents never could. I think that when it says parents, we think of maybe our earthly parents, our father and our mother. But I want to look at how parents can mean something a lot more broad than that. And so in my own life, I've had different kinds of parents that have brought me to the feet of Christ. The first one was my actual parents. I was very blessed to grow up in a family that loved the Lord. I grew up going to church, and it was such a blessing, and I did have a good relationship with God, and my parents really helped me learn what it meant to serve the Lord and to trust the Lord. And when things happened in our family that were great, we came together and we thanked the Lord. And when things happened in my family that were not so great, my parents sat us down and we came together and we thanked the Lord. And that taught me a lot about my own relationship. My parents brought me to Christ in that way. When I went off to college, I went to a military school, and it became apparent to me very fast that it is hard to be a Christian in some social settings. And the military is definitely one of those settings. The people around me were not concerned about serving the Lord. They were concerned about where the biggest party was. They were not concerned about getting together to pray. They were concerned about where the cute girls were. And that was very apparent to me, and I struggled. I really struggled in my faith. And it was during those times that my mom called me on the phone, and she basically just told me, you don't get to pick and choose what you want to follow from the Bible. You don't get to pick and choose which laws and rules that God sets for us that you like and you don't like and only follow those. And in that stance, in that setting, my mother brought me to the feet of Christ again. She knew that she couldn't forgive me for my sins, but she knew that Jesus could offer me something that she couldn't. And she brought me to that space. Another one of these parent figures in my life was actually in eighth grade. And I was in eighth grade. I lived in Colombia, South America. My family moved around South America a little bit when I was growing up. And I don't know. I guess I just thought that I couldn't follow Jesus until I was an adult. I figured like my little middle school choices didn't really matter. And there was a boy that I went to school with named Ethan. He was also in eighth grade with me. And he invited me to youth group with him. And he basically just taught me. He said, your choices right now matter to God because he loves you. He wants you to love him. And it doesn't matter if you don't have a ton of money to give to the church. It doesn't matter if you're not going on mission trips right now because you're young. What matters is your choices every day. And one of the things that he did to bless me was he punched me in the arm every time I said a curse word. I'm not the biggest guy now, but you should have seen me in middle school. I was really, really small. And he was quite a bit bigger than me. And those punches hurt. It didn't take long for me to stop cursing. And it's not just about like these rules that we follow. It was about honoring God with the words that came out of my mouth. And that's something that Ethan, an eighth grader, taught me. And so right now, I'm going to give you guys just a few moments. I want you to really reflect on these parent figures in your own lives. Who are these figures in your lives that brought you to the feet of Jesus? This model of bringing people to Christ is something that we see all throughout the Bible. In Mark chapter 2, verses 1 through 12, we see a story that I'm sure a lot of us have heard before. And we see a man that cannot walk, and his four friends put him on a stretcher to bring him to Jesus. Now, one, that's already a lot of dedication to this friend, carrying somebody who cannot walk. But it goes beyond that, because when they found Jesus, the room was so filled, they couldn't even get him in. So they climbed to the roof, cut a hole in the roof, and lowered him to the feet of Christ. And when he got there, again, Jesus gave that man something his friends never could. He forgave him of his sins, and he healed him. Those are good friends. I mean, I don't think if I was walking and my friend sprained an ankle, I wouldn't be like, all right, piggyback, let's go. Let alone climb a roof and cut a hole and lower him in. Those are good friends. In the same way that our parents will do anything for the benefit of their children, these friends would do anything for the benefit of their friend. There's a website. I heard this preached once from a pastor, and it's a website called Desiring God, and there's an author named Greg Morse, and I want to just read something. He talks about a dream that he's had. I'm just going to read this dream to you guys. He says, never since have so few words haunted me. In the dream, I sat in a balcony before the judgment seat of God. Two magnificent beings dragged the man before the throne. He fell in terror. All shivered as the Almighty pronounced judgment upon him. As the powerful beings took the quaking man away, I saw his face, a face I knew well. I grew up with this man. We played sports together, we went to school together, and we were friends in this life. Yet there he stood alone in death. He looked at me with indescribable horror, and all he could say as they led him away, in a voice I can never forget, "You knew." Those two quivering words held both a question and an accusation. I've read through this dream so many times now, and every single time, even right now, as I read it, I see the face of a family member and of a best friend that doesn't know Christ. I see their face as I read this dream, and it pains me. The model that we see from the parents in this scripture is that it's so important to bring people to the feet of Christ. As parents love their children, they would bring them there. Do we have people in our own lives that we love that much that don't know him? And are we willing to be the ones to bring them to the feet of Christ so that he can offer them something in his salvation that we can never have the ability to do? So I know that I've mentioned a little bit that this sermon is about never growing up and being children. And so it might say, how as children, you might ask, how as children can we lead other children to Christ? I think Ethan presented that. He was a child. I was the same age as him, and he brought me to the feet of Christ. A pastor that poured into my life a lot has this saying, and he just says, "I'm just a beggar showing other beggars where the bread is." I'm just a beggar showing other beggars where the bread is. I ask you right now, do you know other beggars who don't know where the bread is? Are there these children in your life that you can be a parent to in this way and bring them to the feet of Christ? The next group of people in this passage that I think we can learn a lot from is actually the disciples. The passage says, the disciples rebuked the people at the end of verse 13. And I think what we can learn from these disciples is that we can never rebuke somebody for coming to the feet of Christ. We can never rebuke somebody for coming to the feet of Christ. So a little bit about me. I was a swimmer my whole life. I swam growing up. I swam in college. I don't even know how many hours in the pool, too many. And I've got the shoulder injuries to prove it. But my senior year of college, when I finished swimming, I spent about a month of just not working out and being lazy. And I just felt disgusted with myself. And I thought, I've got to do something to stay in shape. And it wasn't going to be swimming. I was done with that. So I started going to the gym. And again, I was not strong. I was not fit. I was a skinny kid. And I showed up at the gym. I'd never lifted weights in my life. I had no idea what I was doing. And I was at this gym at a military college. I was intimidated. And I was presented with this almost paradox. What I found is that I felt inadequate to be at the gym because I didn't think that I was strong enough and I didn't know what I was doing. But the weird thing about it was I could not become strong enough and learn how to do it until I actually started working out in that gym. Do you see the problem I was presented with? And so as I went, I just started kind of fumbling around. I found somebody that could help me and take me alongside and teach me how to work out in the gym. But I still think back and I think, what if on my first trip to the gym, people had just laughed at me? I probably would never have gone back, ever. I probably would have just gone back into the pool and done something else. The gym is an intimidating place. The church is also an intimidating place for somebody that has not been, or somebody that has not been in a while. It's easy to come and feel inadequate. And if somebody walks through those doors right there and feels rebuked, I guarantee they're never coming back. The amazing thing about this idea of never growing up is that we're seen as always being children. And as children of God, there's nothing that we could do to earn his love and his favor. But let's look back to these disciples, these 12 disciples that got to walk alongside of Jesus throughout his ministry on this earth. If you look at them, none of them had done anything in order to deserve Christ asking them to be his disciples. None of them deserved the privilege of walking alongside Christ in this, but he still took them and he chose them and he picked them. These disciples did not earn the right to live and be with Christ, yet they felt that they had the right to rebuke others. Today, Jesus is not on this earth. We cannot physically sit at his feet. And so I think that right now, where we are, the church and coming to church is the equivalent of coming to the feet of Christ. And so that means those of us in this church who have been here for a while and know Christ, in this circumstance, we are the disciples. And so I want to think about, as a church, are we welcoming people in? Or might we be silently, or not so silently, rebuking those who are coming to the feet of Christ? And it can be over anything. It can be their appearance. Maybe they have tattoos and we don't think they should. Maybe they dress differently. Maybe they make too much money or not enough money. Maybe they're still caught in some addiction right now. Or maybe the night before they went out and had a few too many drinks and they come to church and we say, "What are you doing here?" We rebuke them by either not talking to them or maybe gossiping about them. We are still children of Christ. And like the disciples, we cannot rebuke anybody for coming to the feet of Christ. I think something that we need to think about as the church with a big C, the entire church, the body of followers of Christ, how can we be more welcoming? And how are some ways that we are currently rebuking people who are coming to the feet of Christ? And what can we do to fix that? The last group of people that I want to look at in this passage are the children. So verse 14, Jesus said, "Let the little children come to me and do not hinder them, for to such belongs the kingdom of heaven." And he laid his hands on them and went away. I want to start by looking at this idea, to such belongs the kingdom of heaven. What does that mean? What does it mean to have the kingdom of heaven? For this, I think we can even look at one chapter before, Matthew 18, verses 1 through 4. And I'm just going to read that for you. Feel free to flip there if you'd like. It says, "At that time, the disciples came to Jesus, saying, 'Who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?' And calling to him a child, he put him in the midst of them and said, 'Truly I say to you, unless you turn and become like children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Whoever humbles himself like this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven.'" So what does it mean when it says, "To such belongs the kingdom of heaven"? Christ is saying that unless you take a childlike stance at his feet, you cannot enter the kingdom of heaven. Unless you take a childlike stance at his feet, you cannot enter the kingdom of heaven. So in our passage today, verse 14, I want to encourage you, because Jesus does not say only children can enter the kingdom of heaven. He says, to such belongs the kingdom of heaven. That means there's no age cutoff, and that's good news. That is good news. It means that you do not have to literally be a child. You just have to take a childlike stance. I think that this is a unique perspective. I think that Jesus is flipping our expectations here by saying children are the ones that get to go, or children-like people are the ones that get to go to heaven. We live in a society that values growing up. When we turn 18, we're expected to leave mom and dad's house. We're expected to go to college or get a job or go to trade school or do something. But that's what society values. When we finish school or trade school, We're expected to get a job. Any of us have been there when our parents are pressuring us, you got to go, you got to get a job, you got to grow up. And then at age 26, the government even tells us, you got to grow up, off mom and dad's insurance. This is too aware as I'm approaching 26 now. Our culture values these things. We value independence and self-reliance and taking care of ourselves. So what does it mean then to be childlike? What does it mean then to never grow up? I want to look back to how we started today. That kid in the candy store with that just smile on his face or her face. I want to look at some of the characteristics of this kid and maybe apply them to our own relationship with God and see if we can learn a little something from a candy store that might help us know God better. The first thing I want to look at is this kid's dependence and reliance. How did that child even get to the candy store? How is that child getting home from the candy store? Somebody had to bring them. Maybe they live close enough to bike. I guarantee they didn't buy their own bike. Somebody gave it to them. They are completely and utterly dependent and reliant on their parents or guardians or whoever's taking care of them to do everything for them. What does this mean for us in our faith? In a society that values independence and self-reliance, what does it mean to be dependent on God and completely reliant on Him? I think Scripture is filled with characters that could not do things on their own. Moses had his speech impediment, and he was reliant and dependent on God. All of these biblical characters, Gideon was the weakest in his family, and he was reliant and dependent on God to give him strength. We see over and over again this model of being dependent on God, yet we value our independence. I think part of never growing up means having a complete and utter dependence on God. Another aspect of being childlike comes from humility. I think we can agree that we're not talking about a middle schooler here because they may not be the most humble. We're talking about a real child, a young child, an innocent child. That kid in the candy store, he's having a good time, but he doesn't have any delusions of grandeur. He knows that he's a child, and he's happy to be that. In the same way, we need to be humble at the feet of Christ. We need to realize that we're not gods. We're not gods of our own life. We need to humble ourselves before the feet of God. I think something that I still hear today is when somebody tells somebody else to do, sometimes they retort and they say, "You're not my mother." Have you guys heard that before? "You're not my mother. You can't tell me what to do." It's like this little bit of childlike, I don't even know, that just stuck with us. Even today, we say, "You're not my mother." We still acknowledge the fact that our mother does have some authority over us. In this same way, we need to still acknowledge the fact that God has authority over us. We humble ourselves to our parents when we're younger, but at some level, we start growing out of that. We lose this childlike aspect. This is one of the very things we need to hold on to as we remain children at the feet of Christ. And I think that this humility will influence not only our relationship with Christ, but the very way that we interact with one another. Another characteristic of children that I see, especially in this candy store, but something that we need to translate again to our faith, is just this aspect of trust and this aspect in faith. Early on, I said that the kid was not worried about how to get home. The kid's not worried about what's for dinner or what's happening tomorrow because the kid doesn't have to. He or she knows that the parents are concerned with those things, and that kid has faith in their parents to take care of that for them. Why then are we so worried about what's going to happen tomorrow or what's going to happen tonight or what assignment is due next week, or what project we have at work due next month. We have an awesome God who is powerful and who loves us and who wants the very best for us. What if we could have that childlike trust, that childlike faith in God? Imagine the tensions that would just be released, let go of in our lives. We need to have childlike faith, childlike trust in God. All of these characteristics are so contrary to growing up, but what they'll lead to is such an easier life, knowing that God is in control. As we give up our life to God and we take this stance, we are filled with the fruit of the Spirit, with love and joy, with peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, faithfulness, and self-control. And that's the way we want to live. As I recap a little bit, let's walk together in what we've learned. Every child needs to be brought to Christ. That's what the parents do. Who do we know in our lives that needs to be brought to Christ? As I sat here listening to the announcements, you guys have so many amazing things going on. Easter services and women's conferences and just a lot of awesome things. What amazing opportunities to invite somebody to the feet of Christ, somebody that we love and care about. As we look at the disciples, we learn not to rebuke. We know that with Christ comes new life. With Christ, we are reborn. And that will come with a relationship with Christ. But when somebody is just coming to the feet of Christ, he welcomes them with open arms. After I went to college and really strayed in my faith, I still am just shocked at the things that I'd done, but the fact that God loved me still. Where I'd walked away and run away, but when I slowly walked back with my head low, God was there waiting with open arms, not rebuking me, loving me. How can we love those as they come to the feet of Christ? And then regardless of our age, we're God's children, who he loves, who he died for. We can assume this childlike stance in our faith. We can be these kids that are so reliant on God that nothing can sway us, nothing can bring us down. So let me just finish with this. All of you are children of God. Never grow up. Never grow up. Thank you.